Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another show of the Cuckoo 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 Cool Down.
Down.
I'm trying to fake. Yeah, I'm faking my enthusiasm today, but we
cool down.
Oh, yeah, there we go, guys. Chip in, Wonga. Where's your cool down? I want to hear it.
What cool down? Yeah, but it's hot this weekend, bro. I got a really cool down.
Let's hear your cool down there. Let's hear it.
Liverpool's coming down.
Yeah, it's a terrible cool down.
How's that?
Terrible cool down. Terrible. So in the house, guys, we've got the usual. We've got Wonga Dengasaurus. Good news on his front, guys. He's going off on his own now. He's got his own little thing going, guys. So coaches, academy, kids, if you're looking for a good development coach, Wonga Denga's your man. Look out for him. Also, Nick, if you're looking for an assistant, you're on the show with the guy. You might as well speak to him. And then we've got Nick. We know Nick, the head coach of the Tucks student side at University of Pretoria. We've got Selo Kale, the horrid United fan, but very good with numbers, financial guy, and also very good social media guy, because I think over the last week he got us 100,000, sorry, I got too excited, 100 followers on Facebook alone. And then we got Moses Sisele, Mr. Professional only during the 90 minutes, not very professional in any other area of his life. Am I right?
Nick, I can be a captain if you need, Chip.
I need a capitano there.
Date of birth, you'll have to just figure that out.
Nothing wrong with that. Soccer age. Nick, how's all the preparation going, dude? What's the status update with your team and everything else with COVID?
It's been a little bit slow, obviously, because we weren't allowed to play football, train actually. Amateur football only started last week, Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. So we were a bit proactive. We did a bit of testing, physical testing, gym work with the boys. So we've had two sort of friendlies, internal friendlies, just to select the squad. And then we had our first session yesterday, another session today. So the boys are looking sharp, fighting for their places. And, I've got the hard job of cutting players. So I'm,
I don't sleep.
I've got a big squad. I'm a firm believer that you need a small squad to sort of, sort of attend to the detail. If you have too many players, it's going to be rubbish. So yeah, that's where we're at. But hopefully we start in 2 weeks time, boys. So I'll let you know. Hopefully Newcastle won't give me 3 points. So hopefully.
That's good, coach. Come on, coach. And hopefully the game's on TV so we can cheer from our living rooms since we can't be there physically.
So the games for our local league won't be, but we are looking at a potential streaming service. So I'm working on that, but for our Varsity Cup, which will start in the middle of the year, will be. So yeah, we'll keep you guys posted, man. Keep you guys posted. I might have choice words to say on the side of the field. I'm more animated than Brucey. So, yeah, we'll see what we can do.
I think Nick is just being nice when he says he's having sleepless nights. I believe he knows who his first 11 are there. So he's just playing nice guy right now. We all know how it is as a coach. Also, shout out to our sponsor, ABC Dean, for giving the mic. I was telling you guys before the show, this isn't my mic. It actually belongs to Dean. So thank you very much, Dean. You can see I'm busy stalling, guys. I'm very much stalling because, you know, we've got the first game we're going to talk about. The Liverpool-Leicester game. Settle's getting super excited. You might as well kick off.
I need to kick off. And only thing I have to ask about, does Alisson need to be dropped?
I knew it. How do you think this guy's going to cover this question?
That's a ridiculous question, Matt. That's a ridiculous question. Alisson needing to be dropped
if you think about it, right? It's 1-1, right? The scoreline is 1-1, right? Then there's a attack from Leicester. They kick the ball forward. What does Alisson do? Comes out unnecessarily so, and it causes an error, you know, and then Jamie Vardy scores, and it's 2-1, and then Liverpool chasing the game again, and it becomes 3-1. That is a crucial moment in the game. Very crucial. Liverpool could have still won the game at 1-1, you know? Yeah. But what happens? Alisson makes an error, and then after, and this error comes on the back of two errors against Manchester City, where Liverpool were losing, we're drawing 1-1, and he made two crucial errors against Man City in crucial moments, not when the game was already done. But he makes crucial errors right? When it's level, when the score is level.
So I'm just laughing here because I can't wait till we speak about the United game because I've got Martial lined up to talk about. But
no,
we're going to talk about this.
It's not a tit for tat thing. You know, if you're telling me that Martial missed an open goal, then tell me that. But I'm saying that Alisson made an error. And you saw the stat that I sent during the week. Alisson has made 7 errors that have led to goals since last season.
But I'm also going to show you the other stat. Is in the last season, how many trophies did he win? He won what? He won the league.
You're talking about this season.
No, but it's fine. I'm telling you now. You know, we're talking about now in this particular instance. Let me talk now. This sort of scenario, you're talking about the incident, okay? The incident's fine. Yeah, he's completely at fault for this one. He's completely at fault. But what you need to talk about are the things that built up to all of this. You've touched on the Man City game. Yeah, that's probably behind his mind. But the other thing is, and this was always going to be the risk, and I'm not pointing any blame to the youngster, Ozan Kabak, but this is always the risk of when you put someone new into the squad in a game like this and he's had a week of training. Yeah, sure, the week of training probably went well, and I was very impressed with Ozan Kabak during the game. Fantastic. I think he looked great on the ball. He was comfortable. He got caught once or twice by Vardy, but Vardy's an experienced Premier League player, so nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But the actual incident itself, you're talking that 1-1. The whole changing point in the game was that 1-1 thing. It was that moment. And, you know, if we're going back to Liverpool, technically they were dominant. They had 60% possession. They had more attempts on target. You know, it is Leicester City looked dangerous. Yeah. They were still looking the more dangerous of the two sides. But it's one of those things when the confidence is super fragile, all it takes is one sort of moment to change the momentum of the game. And that's what happened, unfortunately. We did well. Milner, another injury. Milner within the 15 minutes. There's a reason why Thiago didn't start that game. There's a reason. The lad is defensive liability. And it's not because I'm not having a go at him, but we're asking him to do other duties. That's throughout his whole career, I think we could probably count how many times he's made tackles on the field with both your hands. That's the fact. So he's a defensive liability. He comes on, sure. He's diving in. He's committing unnecessary fouls. He's lazy with runners in behind. So again, that free kick that happens, I don't think, you know how I am as a football fan. As a footballer, I thought that was a very, very, very soft free kick. But it was a free kick nonetheless. But then the issue with that is the fact that it gets given a penalty, then it goes to VAR, then it doesn't. And one of the biggest things in football, and Nick can speak from a coaching perspective, and so can Musa as a player perspective, one of the things you do not do in football is you never, ever, ever make a change when you have a corner. Why? Because players switch off. So now you've got that period of time in a dangerous position where there's on and off. Is it a penalty? Isn't it a penalty? The players just switch off, unfortunately. And then straight after that, there's, is it offside? Isn't it offside? It's a load of bullshit. So if you take that moment, it's a good like 5 or 6 or 7 minutes where the momentum and everything. So Liverpool on top of the game, it looked like we were going to ease to a 1-0 victory. That sort of happens. And then to be fair, even that free kick, you could argue that Alisson was asleep, but all the players were asleep. So now he's trying to make up. He's trying to make up for that goal he's conceded, and he's done what he's done. He's gone up. And you know, he gets there. To be fair, he gets there. But he didn't have to get there. And also, if you're looking in terms of...
It was quite far, the distance, yeah.
It was very far, and he didn't shout. He couldn't hear anything. So, you know, he is 100% at fault, but he's trying to make up for that. So, do you drop him 100%? No, you do not drop the guy. But we're talking about Liverpool in general. I think tonight's game, Champions League, is 100% a blessing because it gets them to switch off from the Premier League because it's been a shit time, three sort of, you know, losses on the trot. A very shit time for Liverpool. But tonight they can make it all right. But we're not talking about tonight. We're talking about the game.
They can start over, yeah. No, they can start over. You can. I think you should touch on. I think we can touch on the Champions League fixture a little bit, man, because it is a big fixture, and I think we do need to, you know, even though my team's not in the Champions League, but you still need to talk about the teams in the Premier League that are still in the Champions League. You know what I mean? Next week we can talk about Chelsea. This week, obviously, we'll talk about you guys and who's the other team?
Man City.
Man City is next week as well. So it's just you guys obviously this week and then the other two next week.
Celo, Dumo's asking a question here. Why is Celo going hard so early?
Listen. You asked me hard questions about my goalkeeper last week. I'm just asking you hard questions about your goalkeeper.
The timing couldn't have been better for you, to be honest.
If a person makes an error, I ask a question. If he doesn't make an error, there's no question for me to ask. But you know, I think the whole thing about Thiago, man, I think it's I feel bad for him. You know, even being a rival, you know, people are on his case about, you know, that he's not doing well. You know, Thiago had 142 thumbs up in the game. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like the banter is ridiculous on Twitter. People are having a go at him. And to be honest, he's always played in dominant teams. Teams that have 60 to 70% possession. And the midfield that he's played in, he has been maybe the deep lying midfielder at Bayern, but the Bayern obviously played a 4-2-3-1, and he played next to Joshua Kimmich, who's box to box, but also very defensive as well, but also can create. Yeah. So they were playing with two midfielders who go forward and go back, and then Goretzka is obviously a beast in front of them. So now he's playing at Liverpool, where now it's a different style. It's no more. It's not position based. If he was in City, for instance, that's a perfect team for him, because 60 to 70% possession is what you get at City, whereas Liverpool gets 50 to 55.
No, Liverpool would
generally get 60 to 70% possession against all the other teams in the Premier League. I think it's true. They've lost that core, and Alisson is the root of the core. With his shaky performances, gives no confidence to the centre backs.
And Van Dijk is not there.
Yes, and the centre backs are already looking shaky themselves. It's not going to add up good for the centre mid.
And there's no Fabinho or Henderson in the midfield to be strong and dominant. Yeah.
That's the case, because they had their 62% possession over the weekend. Yes, Nick.
Can I ask you? I mean, I was chatting to Jason today actually about it, and he was sort of alluding to the fact that maybe Klopp actually, he took a risk with only going in with three sort of fit centre halves. Obviously, you've had your terrible injury issues, and then sort of the owners aren't spending now. I think there was talk that Koulibaly was one of the ones that Klopp wanted now in January. Obviously, well overpriced, but do you think it was a risk? I mean, it looks like it has been a risk, seeing that the three centre-backs probably weren't enough. Would it have been enough anyway? I don't know. That's the question I'm trying to put my head around. You know, Jason is right in saying, and he said it a couple of weeks ago, is if you take three of the best players out the back line of City, are they going to be in the position that they're in? So I don't know what your thoughts are there.
Well, no, they lost Laporte last season. That was their title. That was their title run. That was one of their defenders. So interesting thing. And the other thing is the new boy that we just signed from whatever, Preston, he was injured for the week as well. He has these two training sessions, he gets injured.
Damn.
So Ozan Kabak. So it's an interesting, and you know, I like Klopp. I think afterwards you saw the real emotion. He had a bit of a tear when he conceded the title, and that shows, you know, he feels a bit for it. But he also came out saying, you know, that's bullshit. He says, my personal life is different to my football life. He's like, what we have right now is we have an interesting challenge. And for me, I go, shut up, that's good. And tonight it starts. It starts with this sort of the Champions League game tonight. Well, at least I'm hoping so anyway, because Red Bull or Leipzig find themselves in a very, very good way at the moment. And we all know the situation Liverpool are in. So I don't know. If we're going back to the Thiago thing, the one more thing I want to touch on is the third goal that we suffer. The ball gets lost by Mo Salah. He plays the ball completely square, high up the pitch. Terrible sloppy, but he's been sloppy the whole season. People are even saying like he's possibly our best player of the season because of the goals he's contributing, but he's been so bad in terms of retaining possession and passing. He's been awful. But he gives the ball away, and then what happens is you've got Thiago and you've got Wijnaldum. Now, Wijnaldum knows the role. He's sitting deep. He's sitting in front of the two back center halves. He's got this thing waxed. Thiago is coming on the midfield, and he's trying to do so much. He's just doing too much. He's doing too much going forward. He's doing too much, you know. And the issue is, when you do too much, you need to take a break. And he's not being smart as to how he's using his energy. And that third ball that gets played in behind him, he's completely switched off and he's let the runner go. So, and that's another scenario. So he gives away the free kick, changes the game, and then the game is completely dead with that sort of goal that we suffer straight after that. So again, like you guys said, questions are being asked of him because he's traditionally come from a good side. And now he's also, to be fair, he's had injuries. He hasn't had time to really fully immerse himself in the team and sort of how they set up. And that's the key thing. I think next season is going to be different, I would like to think. But again, these guys aren't going to get a proper preseason again. So it's going to be difficult for, it's going to be the season that we saw how it started this season is pretty much going to carry on to next season. So I don't know how the coaches are going to manage this, and it's going to be a very, very difficult, difficult scenario. I don't know. Final thoughts, Wonga. You haven't said anything before we move on. Or Mosa.
Okay. Quick one about the coaches. Like, how do you guys feel about Klopp conceding, to the fact that they won't win the Premier League in that fashion? You know, it's quite concerning for a manager that's always high in spirit and always like, you know, supporting the players and actually pushing their performance through his support. How does that ripple through the change room and through the players' mentality and even the fans? I see you talking about next season already, but you guys are still in it.
Look, I think, firstly, as a player, I think if I'm a player in the dressing room and the managers had that sort of conversation, I feel like a real dickhead. I'm like, damn it, this like comes out week in, week out. He's facing all the hard music. And my job's to show up, and I'm not showing up right now. So that it's not me have a question going, you know, is this the right manager for my team? It's me going, I'm letting this guy down. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing as a fan, when I'm looking at it and the manager's coming out saying that, I'm going, this guy's feeling just as much as I'm feeling for this side when we're dropping these points. And that's also cool. So I'm still on side with him. And then the third thing is he's bounced back immediately. It wasn't like it's not a hangover that's lasted in terms of how he's speaking in the public. He's just lost his mother. He's had all these other things. He's had this moment of tear because he's a realist. He's German. We all know Germans are efficient and they're realistic. And then he's gone, look, realistically, we're out of the title race. Because again, it comes back to what Nick had said a couple of weeks ago and what Asilo was saying with regards to Solskjaer. Now it's somewhat taking the pressure off the guys. You guys are still the champions, but you're not going to compete here. We just need to focus on getting points on the board because at the end of the day, Chelsea are what? They're 2 points ahead of us now in terms of for Champions League spot, and that's going to be the crucial sort of thing. But I think this competition, the Champions League tonight, is something where they can focus, and I think they're more geared up for it because it's a once-off game and it's not the league. So I think they can focus now their efforts on that, and who knows? True. If they win it, they qualify for Champions League, so that's a different conversation. But that is a long, different route. Technically speaking, we say it's a long route, but if you're taking the Mourinho sort of mindset, it's less games that you can focus on. So, But talking about the champions, guys.
potential.
But I was saying that we should have given them the title. I'm sorry, after they beat Spurs, because you know if there's one manager who, no matter how he's performing, who could spring a surprise. It's Jose Mourinho, but there was no surprise. You know, it was a clean cut, done deal. Kane and Son, okay, cool. They hit the post once, and then from after they hit the post, they went to score a penalty, and then it was over. Game over. Gundogan, hey man, what did he do to Sanchez, man? He turned him around, and then Sanchez was like,
that was the end. Did he fall
on the floor?
He fell on his face, though. Did you see that?
Yeah, check the floor.
I think he was going with his head to actually go and like try and stop the ball, but it was late, man. No, he was eating grass.
Hey, made him look bad. made him look bad,
He was putting all the cows to shame there, the amount of grass he's eating. You're right, Mosa. It looked like he just fell straight, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa just eventually collapsed. That's what it kind of looked like.
Oh, damn.
Go ahead, Wonga.
I was going to say, just obviously Man City, definitely better team. And they won. The only thing for me, talking point was the penalty. I don't know if you guys saw it. I don't know. In my view, when I look at it again and the way these guys are looking at the VAR, I mean, first glance, you're going to give that a penalty. But if you've got the VAR looking at it, for me, I don't say it's a penalty. Why I don't say it's a penalty is because Gundogan, now, if you're playing, even on, let's see, what happens out the box should be the same in the box. So if it is out the box and let's say someone, now Gundogan does the same thing, he loses the ball, literally loses the ball, and then the contact with, then the contact with Højbjerg comes. But then if you look at it like that, you can actually look at it as Gundogan actually fouling Højbjerg, because now Højbjerg is literally going for the ball and he's literally collided with him, and then now he's fallen over.
I would have forced it to go the other way. It looked like Gundogan was the guy kicking Højbjerg. It wasn't the other way around where Højbjerg was. There was contact, but it was after Gundogan had actually kicked him, which was
I think I saw you tweeting Musa and being angry about it.
Yeah, man, fuck VAR. Like, this is just like that, man, which make me despise the system, man. It's like, no, it doesn't add any clarity. It murks the waters. And there's certain things that are happening that VAR confirms, but everybody just ignores. Like, why are the assistant referees not seeing the fact that Gundogan kicked Højbjerg first? How's that? Yeah. How's that not possible to comment on for the referees? It's just,
and he's lost the ball. He's lost the ball. That's clear to everyone as well. Ball is lost. Is what I can't understand.
Fuck that thing, man. It was better when there was just no more referees.
But dude, when I was watching with the Liverpool game, I know going back to that, but when I was watching that, like I said, 5-6 minutes. Firstly, the guy gives a penalty. No, it's not a penalty. Penalty, not penalty. Then it's a free kick. Then it's a free kick. Oh, then it's a goal. Then it's not a goal. It's offside. It is. And you're looking at it, you're like, this is bloody offside. And then they're like, no, they whip out that freaking line again. No. He's 2.3 millimeters onside. You're like, what kind of, what? This is not football. For me, that is not football. In that scenario, like you said, I know we're talking about Mourinho losing his magic and all that. But I mean, just before that, you're right. You mentioned it, Celo. Hits the crossbar, Kane, which, by the way, he has absolutely zero right to hit the crossbar or hit the upper right from that angle that he had, which was, that was a hell of an effort. So he does that, and straight after that they concede the penalty, and then the game's it's a routine game. So it's interesting. Then they walk away to their victory. And one of the things is though, it's like if we're looking at the penalty, the one thing that if we're going to be really crucial. Now we're not talking about VAR so much, but from a defensive sort of manner, and why Gundogan. Arguably, I'm going to ask this question now in terms of Gundogan. Is he the best player of the season so far?
I'd put my hand up to say yes.
The way he's playing.
I think he has to be definitely top three because in the last 2.5 months he's been the best player.
You guys know the story.
You know the story about our viewer Nico is not watching at the moment. I don't think. But you know he played against Gundogan. I don't know if we spoke about that.
Wait,
No, didn't.
You guys don't know that story?
No, I thought
it was public.
No, champ.
No, the man.
Only so you trained with Gundogan and the like.
No. But Musa and Claudio know when he joined Tux, he had come back from a stint in Cyprus and he made the Cyprus under 21 team, and he played in a Euro. He played in a Euro qualifier against Germany. And Gundogan was playing, so he's actually got his shirt. He used to wear it around campus.
That's it?
Unreal. What an unreal story. But yeah,
I'm sure there was other guys in that team because isn't that the same team as like Emre Can, I think probably?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. But he obviously got the MVP by the looks of it from this season. So
I wonder why, sorry Nick, I just want to say like based on Nick coming back to South Africa, do you think Gundogan sent him back? Yeah, after that he was like, I've got to come back to South Africa.
He probably did what he did to Sanchez to Nico. Just a quick question, you guys, just your opinion. You know, this season's been a very weird season, and like teams are dropping points left, right, and center. Yeah. But is this City team as good as the team that went all the way with Liverpool right to the end with a 1 or 2 point difference, two seasons ago? I don't know. Is it the same quality? And I've been contemplating. I don't know if it is.
I think defensively, they are better. But going forward, they are not. Yeah. So I think defensively they are, but not going forward. So I think now their defensive strength is like ridiculous, man. I think if you look at the defensive, solidity at the back, but going forward, man, with Aguero, Sané, Sterling, I think scored how many goals that season? He scored like 18 goals.
Aguero scored something behind them.
Sané had like 14 assists. David Silva, and Bernardo was on top form. The brainer, so I think this team is just better defensively.
I think you'll have your City fans sort of defending your Gundogans and your Fodens, obviously playing more of a pivotal role now. Obviously, both great teams, but I do think you're playing against teams now that are probably a little bit weaker for the fact that they're playing every week, maybe sometimes twice a week. So it is a bit of a tough one to gauge, but either way, obviously, they're doing a right in terms of a job. Defensively,
Yeah, no, true. Yeah. No, true. I agree with Alessandro. I agree with Alessandro. The most consistent player across the whole season is Bruno.
Yeah, he can definitely be up there in the top three for this season, best players of the season.
Yeah, no,
have you not seen Andy Carroll? He's most consistent.
That man is consistently in the pub. He's consistently in the pub and consistently picking out splinters out of his backside there. But one of the things
my only argument against Bruno Fernandes versus Gundogan is the fact that when Gundogan has shunned, he's carried the team all the way to this pinnacle that they are at.
Or to win.
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes has done well, but you know, Man United they don't look like the product that might win the league, which I use to gauge as well who the MVP is.
But you know, in seasons gone past, man, Luis Suarez has won Player of the Season without Liverpool winning the league. Gareth Bale won Player of the Season without Spurs winning the league, and they just made, I think, number four or top four, whatever it was. I think, yeah, then every other person that did win it, I think, did win the league. But yeah, those two, I think, they stick out in terms of Player of the Seasons that didn't win the league.
I think, yeah, for winning the league, I don't think they should be, they should actually, I mean, yes, I think titles do matter, but I think it's a huge team effort, you know. Obviously, you have to have the 11 people on the field. But I think the Player of the Season, definitely have to go to that exceptional player who helped his team
win. For whichever team,
done well individually. Yeah, any team. I mean, obviously, I don't think you can have a good player. I mean, sitting last on the table and scoring your goals. I don't think that's possible.
But I've seen that with Aubameyang. At Arsenal. Not to say you guys have been like at the bottom of the league, but he's been consistently overperforming the rest of the team and the rest of the squad. at the bottom.
Yeah, you see now. You see Aubameyang as well. Aubameyang has been, like, for me, the season last season. Yeah, I think it was last season.
Past two seasons, actually.
So you say that someone like that, definitely, because now if with you minus his efforts, and Arsenal are definitely lower half of the table, bottom. Probably close to relegation. Yeah, bottom. You minus his efforts. But that's what I said. But even like speaking about that, I mean, I'm mentioning even Bale. Like, since on the Tottenham game, I was just watching Bale when he came on, and Yeah, you see, there was a glimpse. I mean, he showed that, a glimpse of what he can do. I mean, he finished all those guys. Everyone was hot. They were warm. They've been in the game a while, and he just made them look like they just came on the field. But you can see that he's not overexerting himself. You know what I mean? He's not going to be running around. I'm trying to go for everything. He's literally trying to be, he's managing himself on the field. You can see it. He's literally managing his efforts on the field. He's not like just sprinting out when there's not space. He's literally managing himself. I don't know what it is, but he's definitely not physically. He's not the same. But I still think he can give Tottenham something. I still think he can.
But Wonga, you know what?
You love him, Memon.
He loves this guy. But you know, I wanted to mention that
at Arsenal.
Yeah, he would take it any day, Wonga. But like the reason I was gonna save the Bale sort of comment for last, because yeah, he had that moment. But the reason he has that moment is because the game's gone and he's pretty much, the coach has got nothing else to do and he doesn't have to follow any instruction. He's defaulted back to Real Madrid sort of style and I'm going to do my own thing and see what I can get out of it. Where it's almost like he needs to find that balance that he still needs to work within a team and then still bring that out. And I think like I was happy when I saw that. It was a shit little highlight. He tries to shoot from like, I don't know, 60 yards out and hits the defender. Then he does his own thing. I was excited to see that because it means it's still there, but it's like who's going to harness the best out of him? And that's the difficult question because we know his time at Tottenham is pretty much up.
But that's what he's done at, that's what Bale was doing for Tottenham. That's what he was doing when he was at Real Madrid as well. Yeah, when you score goals like from crazy distance, that's Bale. That's who he is. That's what you're gonna get from him. You're gonna get that dribble. I know sometimes he doesn't really dribble a lot, but I mean the shooting, that's him. He's gonna open up the left foot, and he's gonna put it in the top corner. I don't even think it's due to what is going on with the game or whatever. That's how he plays his game. I just think you're not gonna get the same sort of Definitely his speed, you're not going to get it from him because you can see he's managing it even. He's not running it. He's not trying his hardest when he runs. He's definitely managing that.
Akil says, good shot for Grealish if Villa can get into Europe. What do you guys think about that? So we've got Gundogan, you've mentioned Bruno Fernandes, and then you've got Grealish. Who takes that out of the three?
It's a big if that he's added that.
Let's see what happens in the last 14 games. But right now, I'll give it to Fernandes purely because of his contribution from goals and assist perspective across the season, whereas Gundogan has been hot for 2.5 months.
Yeah. I'd give it to Gundogan because of where his team might find himself or might find itself after there have been a couple of substitutes and injuries in his position and the team is finding itself at the top. That would be worthy of an MVP for me.
And you, Nick?
There's only one. Callum Wilson.
Callum Wilson, obviously.
You know, Nick was that kid in the exam where there's multiple choice and there's option A, option B, option C, and then he just wrote in his own option D. Is that what's going on there, Nick?
Yeah? No, but let me ask something that will get Nick very excited. Gareth Southgate has to pick a striker, Calvert-Lewin, Tammy Abraham, Danny Ings, Patrick Bamford, or Callum Wilson.
So I had an argument with someone the other day. People are talking about this Patrick Bamford being the new best thing. The man's 28 years old. He's 28 years old. The man is 1 year younger than... What's going on here? The man is 1 year younger than... I'm not coming up. Marcus is telling me I'm waking up. But he's 1 year younger than Callum Wilson. You know, Patrick Bamford had 5 opportunities to play in the Premier League. He's been recalled on loan time. Listen, I do agree that he's having a great season, but you can't judge it on one season. Callum Wilson's done it a few seasons now. Unfortunately, Callum Wilson's Euros, if he wanted to get selected, is done now with his injury.
If he was fit, who would you pick?
Yeah, there's only one. Well, what do you say? You would have him at Man United, I know for a fact.
Nah, man. Who would
you play ahead of him?
Calvert-Lewin is a better player than Callum Wilson.
We'll agree to disagree.
Wow.
Let him talk about Steve Bruce.
Callum Wilson is in your squad. With the amount of goals he scored this season, would you not select him?
Yeah, you'd be on the bench to come
on. Which strikers have scored more goals than him in your team?
We only have two strikers.
So what I'm saying, you wouldn't play him?
No, they haven't scored more than him. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so you wouldn't play him?
I'd play him off the bench.
So if you have Fernandes with how good he is with assists and all the goals and he's got that shit behind him, Callum Wilson... With a good assist maker,
I'd have Callum Wilson on the bench.
Mad. You are mad. You would start him.
Yeah, no.
The man was
Callum Wilson would be a great player for Liverpool on the bench, 15 minutes off the bench. Let's see what he can do. And obviously, if he does something with it, it'd be a soul shot for Liverpool. It'd be a soul shot for Liverpool.
20 minutes, yeah.
So you'll start strikers that haven't scored as many goals with him with those players that can assist him rather than him actually starting and then you have Bruno behind him. Are you telling me that?
Nick, Marcus is agreeing with you. Marcus is agreeing with you. He's saying, you know, he deserves a place at United. I just want to go back to the sort of Gundogan's, throwing him in there for the candidate of the year, largely because if you got to consider what he did last season and what the role he was asked to do. He was asked to sit deeper, you know, be in control of the back four, just keep position ticking over. Now all of a sudden, because they don't have a striker, Pep's kind of reinvented him. What did you say there, Akil?
There we go, Akil. That's Akil.
I actually, you know what, based on what's happening now. But Akil, what about Firmino's assist on the weekend? What about that? I don't know. He creates
amazing. Amazing assist, bro. That was hot, bro.
That came out of nowhere.
And I wasn't even watching the game, and you tell me about the assist, and I'm like, oh, amazing. And then I check the scoreline. I'm like, 31. Yo, what happened?
Yeah, no, I realized when I sent that, that was all premature. I was like, damn it. I was like, why did I send anything? I should just keep quiet. But anyway, but going back to the Gundogan thing, he's been asked to do a new role. He's not just doing the new role. He's kind of excelling at it. And I think where they're doing really well, and I've got an image here that I'm going to show, but I don't know if my internet right now can handle it. But the first goal, or after the penalty, the second goal that Man City score, you know, I've mentioned where they overload sort of runners in the box. The goal that he scores, the second goal, he's completely out of the box. And at that moment in time, there's only three City shirts in the box, and there's seven.
You're frozen.
I'm frozen, yeah. Yeah, but it's fine. I told you my internet's...
Your internet is African, Baba.
No. We can hear you, but I'm just saying you're frozen as your image.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I take a good picture.
We love the fancy idea, but the internet don't allow.
My point is, he makes his late runs into the box in this sort of scenario where you've got seven sort of Spurs players in the box, all watching the ball, and he makes this run in the box, and they just don't pick him up. And this is happening time in, time out. And then the third goal that they score, it's just one long ball over the top again that he makes a deeper run, which, by the way, Sanchez should be dealing with. That ball should never bounce. But that's sort of what he's doing, and it's actually crazy that there's nothing, you know, his head bounced off the floor. There's nothing innovative about what he's doing as a footballer. It just shows you that if you can do that to a certain footballer who's talented enough, and you say, let's loosen off those reins, and you go have fun because we don't have a striker, you know, someone can do it. It's interesting that more teams aren't adopting that, if that makes sense.
Not true.
Yeah.
You know, even like with noticing Pep's teams as well, I remember in Barcelona, when I was coaching Barcelona, there was a time when many games he actually wouldn't play without a striker. So Fabregas was actually at times playing. Yeah, no, he was actually playing striker, and you'd have, I can't remember who was on the wings now. Sure, Messi was on the other one, but definitely he didn't have a head striker. And I thought maybe they'd get problems with not having Aguero. Aguero's best 20 goals in a season guaranteed.
And he's back now. He's back now because he was on the bench on the weekend.
Yeah, so that's now at 10, at least, till the end of the season. So, but yeah, I mean, they've done well with what they have. I can't lie to you, very well, especially on the top of the table. Yeah.
Right, guys, next game. West Brom, Man United.
Musa,
banana skin man. He's the banana skin king, this guy. He's calling all these games. You said the Liverpool weren't going to win. You said United weren't going to win.
He's got a crystal ball. He's got a crystal ball. But yeah, I think, crystal ball or dust, bro?
What is it?
I think it would be a miss of me not to ask questions about the first goal and how VAR didn't review that goal because it was a clear foul.
Maguire soft.
That's Maguire not a foul, man. Goal.
That was Lindelof.
Lindelof.
He had his hand. Man. He had his hand on Lindelof's face, guys. No, he had his hand on Lindelof's face.
That was never
face,
a foul, dude.
You know, guys, come on, man. Come on, man.
No way, dude. That's not a foul. That's never a foul.
I'll be honest with you, Selo. I looked at it and I was like, yo, Lindelof is soft. Because Lindelof has no intention of hitting that ball. And then who's the striker now for West Brom? I'm not sure his name. But anyways, he Diagne. Yeah, he went for the ball.
You striker, yeah.
As he goes for it, that's when his hand gets on Lindelof. I don't even think Lindelof is gonna get there. But again, he's actually right. The question is right. That actually doesn't even really matter. The question is, if it's a foul, it's a foul. And I saw his hand over the guy's face. I believe it does. There's a question needs to be asked.
I sense Claudio's internet hasn't been the greatest, guys. But mine should be quite good today. Let me see here.
Why? What are you going for? Are you going for?
He's got something.
There?
He's got something lined up there. But before he lines anything up,
do you guys see that? Do you guys see that?
I can't see anything, Selo.
What?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah,
you must open his eyes, man.
Please, guys. Tell me, what's that? Isn't that a foul? Please, guys.
You must open his eyes.
Right. How can you not? How is that not a foul? The man can't even see. He's been blindfolded, guys. Blindfolded. Look at that, guys.
He must keep his eyes on the ball, man.
Look at this, guys. Oh, guys, come on, guys.
No, that wasn't. No,
David Luiz.
You know what the thing is?
David Luiz couldn't stand.
That's a slip ticket, man. That happened.
That's also a thing. Claudio Luiz, hair touched the guy's stud, and they gave him a red card, and they gave a penalty.
I want to say this, man. I want to say this. Like, you're talking about that incident at that moment in time, and specifically. Now, if my screen was working, I'll show you the build-up to that goal.
One of the issues
I have, again, and this isn't a personal attack on your boy Martial, but when I saw him in starting lineup as opposed to you have the option of Greenwood, I think Greenwood's still a young player, has got to prove himself, so he's going to be tracking back more. And to be fair, I'm not making Martial 100% the scapegoat in this sort of scenario, but this is, it's 1 minute, what was it, Settle? It was 1 minute, 27 seconds in the game when this goal is conceded. It was very early, right? So it is almost like the Man United stepped onto West Brom going, okay, you know, we're probably going to win this. They're not as tight as what they have to be. The ball gets played into the middle of the park. It bounces in between Fernandes and it bounces between Rashford. The player beats two of them, right? But at that moment in time, Martial's far out wide and he's just ball watching and he's not even reacting. He's waiting. And the man's behind him. Shaw's ball watching. He's been completely sucked in. The midfielder then gets the ball and he runs completely. He has one or two, I think it's three touches on the ball. Still, you've got two defensive center mids. Not one of them come to attempt to close him down. The ball gets played out wide. Only after the ball's been played out wide does Martial go, oh shit, I need to react. But then the funny thing between all of that is he then comes back and then Shaw, who's marking no one at this moment in time, doesn't go, shit, Martial's not the best tackler in the game. Let me go support the guy. He just stands off and completely watches him. He gets a touch of the ball, plays it back, and then with all the time in the world, the ball gets put into the box. And we know you're playing Sam Allardyce. What's his game plan? They bought this Diana, whatever how you pronounce his name. They've got him there for a reason, and he did the jizz. He did the business.
He's strong and super fit. He's keeping them working there.
He's a strong man, yeah. And some goalkeeper who was supposed to be dropped by Claudio standards. I don't know if Claudio saw that. He's made a save. Great save, one-on-one. I don't know if Claudio saw that. I don't know. Maybe if that went missing in the footage.
Sorry, I've lost connection. I can't hear what's being said. I've lost connection.
Mr. Claudio Barrera maybe didn't see it. I don't know. Some keeper who was supposed to be dropped saved something. I don't know. You tell me. But yeah, obviously. I didn't say dropped. I said for next season building. Apart from the foul, you shouldn't give the other team that much space to create a chance like that, and not just that chance in itself, right? I think there was multiple chances where West Brom created more chances, more clear cut chances than Man United. They had a higher XG expected goals than Man United. I think they had a 1.29, Man United had 0.8, I think it was. So West Brom. It's not that it was a fluke, that point. They deserved to get the point and could have probably even snuck another goal, you know, the De Gea save and that other chance that the same striker had where he shot over the bar. So they had the better chances. Man United, I think, you know, Ole, in terms of his setup, was just completely wrong. You can't set up with a McFred. Cool, I understand Pogba is injured, but Donny van de Beek is available on the bench, start the guy, or rather play McTominay high up, because you know he has even said that McTominay can contribute to in goals. McTominay's got 7 goals already this season, because he's a good box to box and he's got that obviously one of his shots got cleared off the line. Try change tactics, you know, that's the problem with Solskjaer, is he doesn't really move away from his tactics. He does the same substitutions and same tactics, you know what I mean? So it's very easy for an opposing manager to prepare for Solskjaer. So that's quite disappointing from him. And I think that just shows you, in terms of what Man United, you know, their limitations, is that you can't be a team that concedes 35 goals, I think it is, in the league. You know, cool, we've scored the most goals, but we've conceded the most in the top six. You know what I mean? Second most after Liverpool. But that's just the one goal difference between us and Liverpool. It's criminal. It's criminal. You can't.
And also, you know what else is criminal? Something that no one has said yet is that Liverpool got what is it? Out of 5 games, Liverpool have accumulated 6 points, right? Man United after 5 games have also only accumulated 6 points.
Yeah. So it's been rubbish. I think Man United are the bottom 5 in the last 5 games. where obviously City's number one, and you know your Chelsea's are there, the top, there. Your Chelsea's, your West Ham's, your Brighton, your Brighton's, your, you know, your even your Newcastle's are in the top 10 in the last 5 games. You know what I mean? Arsenal's are top 5 in the last 10 games. Whereas Man United and Liverpool are at the bottom there. You know, because they've done poorly. I think, yeah, obviously we've drawn more games than what Liverpool has. It's just obviously Liverpool has lost, but it's criminal for such big teams to be having such defensive frailties. And it's just it shows that Man United has a long way to go. You know, I think we've always been crying out for a different centre back. You know, Man United has only lost one game. With Maguire and Bailly has started together. So that says a lot. And with Lindelof and Maguire, you can't go anywhere. You know, the top four is the best we can aim for, but more than that, we can't get it, man. We need someone who can be a good partner to Maguire, because obviously we've spent so much money on Maguire. And, you know, I'm sure obviously we'll touch on the whole thing of price tags and stuff. You know, Kepa is now back at being number one because of price tags. You know, they told Tuchel, hey, bro, you need to play this guy. You know, so like Maguire, you can't drop him.
I don't know if that's the case at Chelsea for having Kepa back in the squad. I think, you know, he did do well in his FA Cup appearance, and there was just that sort of confidence.
Sorry, Musa. I just want to say, you know what it was? It was Celo spreading that stat where they're comparing Alisson to Kepa, and I think that landed up, that went to Abramovich, and Abramovich is like, wait a minute, Kepa's done less damage than Alisson.
Keep him on.
It's that Marina lady, bro. Hey, man, I'm just picking up on what I saw yesterday. But we'll touch on it again in the Chelsea segment. But hey, man, that's what I saw on Twitter. Chelsea fans said that was a mandate. Say, hey, bro, this guy cost £72 million. He's got to play.
But then Havertz.
I mean, he's gonna come in, man. Don't worry. Listen, a goalkeeper's one position, but the other position, you know, you can fit him somewhere. You know, you'll come in. You know, but keeper is like, hey, man, we've had this guy for three seasons. One of Sarri and one of Lampard. Yeah, this is third season, and he earns, I don't know, £150,000 to £100,000 a week. They're like, hey, man, this guy, we need to get value for money, or you need to play him so that you can still sell him for half the price, man. So it's tough.
These are conspiracy theories, Jim. But honestly,
I would assume that happens.
My heart gets sore for players like Eric Bailly and Donny van de Beek at Man United at this point in time.
Yeah.
They're not given the opportunities that they have to be getting at the level that they play at, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even when van de Beek does come on, he's given 20 minutes to...
Yeah.
He was given 10.
He was given 10 this past weekend, which is ridiculous. It's criminal, man. You can't give someone 10 minutes to affect the game. You need to, like, honestly, against West Brom, I'm not saying that I'm looking down on West Brom, but that's an opportunity for you to actually try and play a Donny with a Fred, or Donny with a McTominay if you want.
Also
to try and play him with a Bruno, because every time he plays it's like either or. So try and play him with a Bruno. Pogba's out. Pogba's only going to come back probably for City. You know, so try something different, man. But hey, man, that's Solskjaer for you. The Man United fan base is saying that he's got too many favorites and he just sticks to his favorites and he doesn't deviate from his favorites, and that's sad.
But he's gonna have a problem with his favorites, because you know he plays his Scandinavian brother, and we know the issue now. Maybe, you know, Lindelof with another centre half is a better player, but the two, him and Maguire, it's just oil and water
doesn't
at the moment.
Work,
time.
Yeah.
But like you said, he's gonna have to flog Lindelof, and that's gonna be hard sore for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But whenever I say that name, it always, that's a tongue twister for me. Red lorry, yellow lorry. Red lorry, yellow lorry.
They probably have to catch the same plane together to Scandinavia, you know. So it's tough, man.
That's awkward. Right, Wonga, you were confident here. You were very confident. It came through. Other guys not so confident. What did you like about this game? Like, what did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? The setup to the team? Who played the best? Speak. This is your time now. You guys are doing all right.
I think, for me, number one, the only reason I thought about it, I mean, look at Leeds, guys. They're the same. If they're going to give you, if they're going to score a goal, they're going to give you maybe one or two extra.
Mm.
That's Leeds the whole season. So even if Arteta's looking at this, he's thinking, yeah, I mean, it's great. Aubameyang's got his hat trick. Even the Manning, which scored the first goal, you know, he seems a bit confident there. But again, it's his Leeds. They've literally, they are exactly where we are in the league, on the table, but they've literally conceded more. They scored a lot of goals. They scored more than us and they've conceded more than they've scored. So you must understand Leeds is giving goals to everyone, you know, so you've got to look at it. You've got to also look at it from that point of view. Saka for me, again, very influential in that game. He got us the first penalty, but again, somehow VAR managed to turn that around. I do not understand how. And then he pressed
that up. That was ridiculous, by the way. That was, that, yeah. I don't know if anyone else saw that, but that VAR decision ruling that not a penalty was nuts. Like the guy actually leaned on him, completely threw him off the ball as he beat him for pace, and they're like, no penalty. I couldn't understand it.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Even the ref didn't even hesitate in calling it, you know, and so everyone sort thought the same. I just don't understand that. But, and then again, you know, those things, you see, decisions like that, they get, you know, lost because now Arsenal still wins 4-2, you know. Somehow they need to, I don't know what they're doing, but it's a flipping, you're watching the video. I can't understand how these guys, make this decision. And it's their job. It's literally, they don't have to do anything else. Like,
Wonga, it comes back to what Akil was saying. He's like, the problem isn't the technology, the problem is the refs. And in this scenario, the guy making the decision was like, hey, listen, Mr. Ref, this is wrong. So the ref's going to go, listen, I don't want to look stupid, so I'm not going to go against what someone else says because then my neck is really on the line. Whereas if he goes with the VAR, whoever makes the decision there, it's a sort of team decision. So if it's a really bad decision, it's together they go down with the sinking ship. It's not just one man sticking his neck out to dry, you know. It's that sort of mentality.
But look at what happens. And many of them, you know what happens? Think about it. Like, especially now you get something like Saka. Like, hey, they look at it and they're like, look, Arsenal can go, I think, 2-0 up. And then they literally tell the ref, now you go make the decision. Now the ref, he's got his team there who should be doing their job. Now he has to go out there. And I don't think that's the case because now the ref is the one who's now gone and looked at this and now he's made a decision over everyone, you know, over everyone he's made a decision. Those guys in the back they're hiding. They're hiding there at the back. The ref at the end of the day, even with all these other, decisions, they've always, dubious decisions, they've always called the ref to go look and the ref has had to make the final say. So you've got to ask yourself, what's the point of those guys at the back there? But,
well, in this game as well where, was it this game where Bamford was also given a nice ball and he ran through two defenders and they took him off the ball. Yeah, they clutched him. None of them even touched the ball. They took the striker out and wasn't a peanut for that. Not even VAR checking.
Yeah, but I mean, if they don't give Saka's one, for me it's more of a, but if they don't give Saka's one, they can't look at Bamford's one. That's the honest truth about it. No ways they can look at it. Yeah, but if the way I look at it, even I think Cedric was. Do you say that's a foul? I mean, you've seen that many times. The guy's literally just put his body in front of the defender. With the other one now, with Saka's one, you can even see when the guy, he just tries to lean across Saka, and it's because he hasn't gone in front of Saka, number one. He's gone right behind him, crossing behind him, taking his legs out, and I think that's why for me it's more of a pain than the other one. The other one, Cedric is in front of him. The guy, Pedro's got no chance of winning that ball. He's literally in front of him. But I mean, team performance, it was great. And I'm happy to see that Saka's not just like a one-hit wonder, you know. Every game, the guy is performing. He's trying things. It's going well for him. Even Smith Rowe as well, doing very well.
And Smith Rowe's, the assist, was that intentional? Or was that a shot at goal that he's just miscued and found Aubameyang's head?
Definitely miscued.
Definitely miscued. But with the way he's been playing, I think a bit of luck there.
He was trying to curve it into the back of the net, yeah. And then
And that thing went.
That's been a hell of a cross, though. That was a hell of a cross.
Yeah, but Aubameyang also did well to anticipate that. That was very good for me.
So question for you then, Wonga, in terms of Odegaard, he got a start, and I liked how they said, you know what, we're going to put Aubameyang in the position that he does really well, and we're not going to flip him, stick him out wide, because firstly, he's your best player, so play your best player in his best position. So they played him up front. I really like that. And then behind, they had Odegaard, Saka, and Smith Rowe. How did Odegaard do in this?
That's what I'm talking about playing players who are not getting game time in a match where you know you're going to get on the ball a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. Odegaard hasn't started a game. That's the kind of game you play Odegaard, where Leeds is open. You know what I mean? Now, yeah. Bloody Ole doesn't even play from the back in a game where Mayer's going to have the ball so much. You know what I mean? Arteta shows you how he's supposed to do That's things. True. You know what I mean? You know, and you're still playing with a Ceballos behind, who's not obviously the strongest person defensively. You can see, you're going to get the ball a lot, attack, you know what I mean? Which is great from your coach, Wonga. Have that flaw about Odegaard's performance there. Sorry, I took it there. Sorry.
No. I think, yes, I mean, that pretty much sums it up from that point of view as well. And yeah, he did play well, given that game. But it's a game, like, yeah, Cicillo was right. It's a game where you're giving many of the players confidence. And I think also playing Smith-Rowe, I think it's also, I mean, Smith-Rowe is not really, it's not really a left mid. And it's also a game you can try that out. I mean, Smith-Rowe is good going forward. He's good on the ball. So it is also a good game to try something like that. But again, I think Arsenal also did well to score four goals because Leeds are leaking. And surely if you're a team that's looking to do things going forward, trying to win matches, I think, yeah, you have to be scoring at least three or four against Leeds.
Yeah. Wonga, concern for suffering two goals after going 4-0 up.
Yeah, look, that's also was we were 4-0 up at I think it was 50 minutes. We were 4-0 up, so we had about
it was early. Yeah,
another 40 minutes to go, and I think guys kind of switched off that header as well. Yeah, my goodness me, that was I asked myself if someone else would have defended that header. I mean, like, I was flying. He's literally missiled himself and put himself on the back of that thing. I think it was a good head. I have to give that.
He got in front of David Luiz for that one, huh?
Yeah,
he got in front of him, hit it.
Yeah.
Luiz a bit scared for the.
Yeah, he came in hot. He came in hot. But then again, you look, everyone is concerned. I mean, Leeds have scored 40 something goals this season. It's probably the way Arsenal are defending at the moment. I think those goals were bound to get in. It's not like we're keeping clean sheets here and there. Leeds score goals, and I think those goals, the way they've scored them, it's not like it's a surprise. They gave Liverpool problems. They gave, I mean, most of the top four teams problems when they've played them. So I don't look at it and say there's much of a concern.
Yeah. I think overall, then, it's pretty promising. I think Celo highlights Arteta's sort of making the right decisions. I was very, very chuffed with the fact that they had the three youngsters and Aubameyang up front, because it's to that point where you're letting them express yourself. All you guys probably need now going forward is you need two better players behind them to cover them, in my opinion. I think the defense somewhat,
yes,
it's a Spanish guy at right back, it's a Portuguese guy at left back, and your two Brazilians at center back. They're all speaking the similar language. You know what I mean? Like a language barrier. There's some sort of chemistry there. Yeah, sorry. What is that, Nick? You've been quiet.
No, they're all Hispanic, so they all relate. So
No, they're not Hispanic. The other guys, there's actually three out of the four more Portuguese speaking. So the one Spanish guy.
Yeah, but
you mean Eastern European.
Hispanic.
Get it right, man. Come on, Hispanic. No, you don't call Portuguese Hispanic.
This guy. All the same, man. What are you talking about?
This is why the guys don't like going to the north of England, because they think everyone's the same there. They go playing for Newcastle. Yeah, you're all Hispanic. You're all Hispanic.
You're all the same. Yeah. Muchos gracias.
Sorry.
No. But Claudio, Portuguese and Spanish people can understand each other. That's a fact. I know that.
Más o menos. Yeah. The problem is the Portuguese guys think that the Spanish can understand them completely, and they don't like speaking each other's language. It's just how it is. I had that moment when I was in Madrid. It was hilarious. I was with this guy from South Africa. He's Portuguese. He's like, don't worry, I'm going to go get his beers. Now, I've learned some Spanish. I know a little bit of Spanish. And I go, and he's like, oh, he goes to the bar, and he's like, oh, you got two cervezas, por favor. It's like, two beers. And this dude's looking at him like, what is actually going on? Then, just to give you an example, then I've got to say, what did I say? Dos cervejas. You know, and then the guy's like, oh, okay, I got it. Like, that's the difference in the dialect. Wonga, to round off this sort of game in terms of moving forward in your next game, overall opinion here?
No, look, for me, I think, again, like I said, Saka, good that he played, is good what he's showing. But I think the most important thing was Aubameyang getting those 3 goals. We've said that if he's scoring, we're probably most likely winning matches. He carried us the last two seasons, and we need him back on scoring form. So it's good that he's, I think he's got 5 or 5 in the last 4. I can't remember the stats. Last 5 games is doing well. He must just continue it. Make sure it's every game instead of like, you know, gaps between. So yeah, I'm just happy about that.
What is Marcus talking about? This, Arteta's post-match was hilarious. He accepted the.
I didn't see that.
Marcus, you're going to have to send us the link to that because no one saw that. But he said he's admitted defeat there. It looks like he's sad. But let's talk about someone who should be sad, and we kind of all knew this. You know, to be fair, Nick, we didn't even speak much about Newcastle because we all actually said 2-0 victory to Chelsea, and in the end,
I was the only person saying, guys, can we just try and give Newcastle a bit of a chance? And everyone was like, no, we can't. And Nick is
going to be a great time.
Look now, Silo, you gave them a chance. Look now.
But it was a tough night. You could see the first, within the first 5 minutes, Chelsea were just moved. I don't know whether we were very poor or Chelsea were very good. And maybe Musa, I'll give you guys the credit, but just the way you were moving the ball, it was very quick. It was very decisive. Hudson-Odoi looked like a constant threat. You know, Werner was obviously very, he was a threat himself, but I just, for me, Hudson-Odoi looked very tricky. I mean, our left back didn't know what was. He didn't know if his name was Arthur or Martha, and his name was Jamal. So I think he was very confused. I mean, we had moments. We had, I mean, in the second half, we were, in terms of attempts, we had more attempts than Chelsea. And I think that's what the commentator was talking about, the fact that Tuchel's team normally does this. You know, they score the 2 goals, and then they are content with that. They still control the game, but they haven't really had that killer instinct where it's sort of, you know, if you were playing against a better team, you know, maybe that could have came to sort of bite you. We had one or two chances. Kepa made one or two saves, but there was nothing really where it looked like we were coming into it. I don't know about you guys. You know, I'm coaching the game now, and I'm sort of learning as I go.
there's a hard question here, Nick. There's a hard question. Relegation candidates there for Newcastle.
We'll get to that. But in terms of, you know, we've changed our system and we're playing a diamond. But just if you guys think from a footballing perspective, a diamond's, you know, objective is to narrow the pitch, stifle the opposition down the middle third of the pitch vertically. And then it obviously gives you an opportunity with your flanks, meaning your fullbacks, to get forward. But we played a sort of a diamond where we had 3 midfielders and then Almiron at the top of the diamond. But that was the top of the whole, the furthest depth of our players. So our strikers essentially were playing as wingers, but they weren't coming back. So we had a very wide diamond, if that makes sense. But the wide players, which were essentially the strikers, weren't tracking back. And for me, if you're going to play a diamond, you need to play a narrow diamond where you overload the midfield. It's a 4v3. And then you have 2 strikers with your fullbacks being able to go. So, I mean, Chelsea had their fullbacks bombing forward. We had strikers who were acting as wingers, not tracking back. And then you had a bank of 3. So your 3 midfielders, Almiron was essentially a striker where he should be playing as a 10, but we had a bank of 3 sitting in front of a bank of 4. So, I mean, we had no chance. I mean, in that situation, you know, I don't know if you remember, Claudio Musa, we used to play, when we played better teams, we would tell our midfielders to match up, pick up as soon as they get the ball, you know, you matched up and then you force them not to play. I think we needed to do that. Jorginho was getting on the ball. He had all the time and space. He would turn around. He picked up that ball, bombed it there to, I think
Hudson
it was
Odoi, Werner.
He had Werner. Werner takes him on, boom, hits it across for the first goal, and then the ball gets spilled there to Giroud, and then they scored. And the game, as soon as we conceded, the game was done. So, unfortunately, Bruce didn't have the answers.
He didn't even test Kepa.
To be,
he had one good game.
You should have kept her four times. One is a goal.
Just in my opinion, Musa, on Kepa, he looked, if you looked at his feet, his footwork, and when the ball went into his feet, he looked very shaky. In my opinion, he keeps trying to play
at the back there.
Yeah, like, he looked like a goalkeeper that's waiting for a mistake to happen.
Yeah.
But going to Pums's question, we are definitely in a relegation battle. If you look at it, Fulham play two games before we play our next. More than likely, we're not going to get any points against a Man United. Although, if there's any opportunity, I think it will be now. If, you know, realistically, if West Brom can get a point, you know, why can't we? And Man United's home form isn't the greatest, but compared to their away form. But if you look at Fulham play Burnley, direct opponents in the relegation battle, and then Sheffield United, direct opponents in the relegation battle. So if they get six
level
points,
with you,
they could be 1 point behind us. And then we lose that, then we go into the next game week going pound for pound. The only positive I see there is Fulham haven't won back to back this season. So I don't see it happening. That means they would have had to win three in a row.
But Luis Maja guy, man, hey, man, they looked hot against Everton. I think that performance was very good. I didn't watch much of the games this weekend, but I did watch the Everton Fulham game, and hey, man, they looked very good. My favorite player, as always, Lookman, as always, dangerous. Like, he needs to get back to a top 10 team if Leipzig will sell him. But yeah, I think it doesn't look good for you guys, man. I think we all thought that the new coach was going to bring in a some more energy, but then the Wilson injury happened. I think that's where now your heads have dropped, which is not good.
Listen, the only positive for me is we are playing better. I would say that, but there is so many problems. So, like, you know, you can try plug one hole in a sinking ship, but all the other holes start opening up, even though you start plugging, but there's not enough plugs to plug all the problems. So
it's unfortunately, actually crazy. Sorry, Nick. I just want to say this. It's actually crazy that everyone here right now has had this sort of everything that you're saying now with the problems and plugging in holes and on your ship sinking. We've all this season. Some of us all are still experiencing it. Others, we've all experienced a part of it, which is nuts from a fan perspective. Yeah. It's incredible.
It's crazy, man. And I think we are sleepwalking to a relegation, unfortunately. And I hope, just doing the calculations, and I think we need 38 points. Can we get there? We need probably 12 points to 14 points. 14 games, you know, I'm hopeful. I don't know if it's going to be possible.
Sure.
I think Callum Wilson will come back for the last four or five games. No, probably a bit more, six games. I think maybe he will be the difference. But I don't know about what you guys think, but Daniel Sturridge on a free, would you take him now at this point? I think he could maybe give us an option.
Yeah,
he'd give you some kind of energy up front, man. You'd help Callum Wilson at least have some combination play
Just make sure he doesn't gamble. Doesn't go to the bookies.
Yeah. Guys, when I worked with him, I made the comment going, yeah, have you ever been to South Africa or whatever? And he's like, no, that place is dangerous. I was like, what? I said, dude, if you come over, you know, I'll protect you. He's like, yeah, because I might have to bring a couple of bouncers coming through to SA. These legit words to me. I was like, what? I was like, bro, like, I don't know what people are feeding you.
There was a Liverpool player. Who was it? Was it Skrtel? Yeah, he when they came here for the World Cup, he also was walking around with like three or four bodyguards, huge guys, and walking around also, in the mall. So
Skrtel, the man who looks like a butcher. The man who looks like the butcher. I don't know what's going on there.
Softest butcher in the world.
So it's funny, whatever's happening.
Yeah.
But Mosa, tell me the sort of lineup that he put out. Why was the Kepa change in place?
I think
you guys look really solid, you know. I do think Jorginho, when it gets to 65, 70 minutes, he starts to lose the ball a little bit, eh?
Yeah, it gets a little bit tired, man.
Much of an injury compared to the rest.
Yeah, man. I guess, honestly, the only way I can rationalize Kepa playing is the fact that he came on in the FA Cup. He got his opportunity to play in the FA Cup, and he did pull off one or two really good saves. So that was good enough to give him an opportunity to build some confidence and give Mendy some opportunity to actually rest.
And also to give Maria validation to say, you will start this player. So Casemiro,
Mourinho, yeah.
Hey, man, I don't know how many more games he'll be starting. These guys have a pretty tight schedule of games now with Champions League and the like. So from a managerial perspective, I understand why you have to start resting a couple of the key players. The big thing for me is seeing players like Mount on the day. He never looked like he had the energy that he generally possesses. You saw a lot more energy coming in from Hudson-Odoi, coming in from Timo Werner, but Mount was not up to the pace of the day, and I think he needs some rest over the next couple of days, you know, because there's going to be more football.
I mean, it was unfortunate for Tammy Abraham to get injured. I thought it was a great tackle by Lascelles.
It was amazing.
That's a good tackle. And it was unfortunate his ankle got stuck in there, and you know, they were speaking about the fact that Tuchel's not afraid to make changes. For me, Giroud is he's like a sniper. You know, when you go to the army, you get those silent assassins there, that guy. And he's always
there. Those are called hitmen.
Hitmen, yeah, but.
The army has sharpshooters, boy.
snipers, you don't know it's coming. And the man's there in the right place. And listen, I thought, you know, we talk about VAR. I don't know if you saw the incident when Andy Carroll was on, but he was very clever in the way Andy Carroll is about to go up for a header, and the man goes there and he backs in, he looks at him, he backs into him, and then as soon as he feels Andy on his back there, he falls forward and wins the foul. I'm like, wait, that's a foul the other way around. But anyway.
But even for the goal, Werner's goal, Timo Werner's goal, he put his hand up, eh? He put his hand up to actually block the sight of the defender, Giroud. And that's valuable, dude. Like, he never fouled anybody in the process, but he managed to get the line of sight of the defender blocked, and that led to the defender just flicking it and the ball bobbling in the back post for the goal. It was great to see Werner score. I was, you talk about, you know, as soon as we scored that goal. Yeah, he was so happy. As soon as we scored that goal, it looked like we'd win the game. But before that goal, it looked like Werner had a point to prove, which was nice. It was very, very good to see from a player who hasn't scored in a lot of games, actually coming with that aggression and that hunger over the course of the day. So it was nice for him to get a little gift for that.
Mosso, you know, the huge debate that we have here, the corporate sort of club versus the family club. And in this instance, the corporate club, run by the ruthless man with an iron fist, Roman Abramovich, you know, he brings in Tuchel. You guys are on the winning bounce or winning streak, and now all of a sudden you guys are in the top four. I mean, the right decision, wrong decision, and also Werner scoring goals, Werner. So, what are your overall verdict?
I can't complain. It's too early for me to even start complaining about Tuchel. You know, out of 15 points, he's collected 13. It's going to be very, very difficult for me to criticize him about what he's doing at this point in time. What I do like, and what Nick alluded to earlier on, is the urgency. It's like there's fire under everybody's butt there.
The speed at which you play is unreal. The speed at which they were playing is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's great.
I think there's never been a question. There's never been a question about the quality of players. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. Like, you can see there's natural ability. You know, you got a Marcus Alonso who comes in there, and the way he was just crossing the ball, the way he was zipping it about, the way he got into the box taking shots himself. I mean, the ability, the clear ability is there. If you put them on paper and you have to speak on paper who could win a league, just on the ability of players, you know, Chelsea would be up there. But it's just been a matter of trying to get, you just get, you know, the big thing is, are they going to give the manager time? Is the manager going to get the players on side? And, I mean, arguably, after 5 games, they're on side. Is it going to continue? You know, if you guys can finish in a top 3, you know, that's a great season. And you guys go far in the Champions League, you never know. Maybe you can find yourself with a trophy.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm, that's true. Fabio, are you still there, man?
Yeah, no, I'm still there. I'm just, you know, Nick put such a convincing statement there. All Moss had to say was, exactly.
No, but it's all true, man. We look super excited. It's tough to downplay all the work that Thomas Tuchel has done at this point in time with the club. What I like to see...
You don't want Bruce anymore.
I can thanks, bro. You can keep him.
Guys, okay, so Tuchel... four games in a row he's won. He's doing well. He's back in the top four there. Chelsea are doing the thing. But is currently, based on what Richard's been getting louder in our group talk, another win there for West Ham, a 3-0 win. Sure, it's against Sheffield, but also gunning for the top four spot. And arguably, are they the best side in London at the moment?
Oof. Yes. This year they are the best side in London. This year.
Listen, you know, I'm gonna speak about this. And Newcastle had this in 2012, 2013. We went on a run where we finished 1 point off the Champions League spots. Chelsea finished sixth, and they won the Champions League with who was your coach? And we went all the way, and listen, there was a chance of us finishing the Champions League. And then the next season, you know, we played Europe. Next season, we finished 16th. I'm not saying that's going to happen to West Ham, but they must just enjoy the moment. They must go.
It has already happened to West Ham. When they had Payet, then they moved into the new stadium, and then all of a sudden things fell apart. So they had that high.
Yeah, they had the high, and I think, you know, there's always going to be those teams that have that moment of glory. But, you know, it will be interesting to see, even if they finish 8th or 7th, it's a great season for them. From where they were last season, now the matter that they need to deal with is, can they maintain that? And I think that's the biggest thing, because arguably, if you compare their squads to anyone in the top six right now, it's not even close. You wouldn't take half of their players. But they are a unit. David Moyes has got them playing. He's got that old Everton factor back. I think, you know, that is a definition of good coaching. He's got players on side and he's coaching them in a way that is effective in a league that is crazy. And, you know, well done to them. Well done to them. And I think it's just the maintenance of it. Can they handle it? Can they stay in Europe for as long as they need to and sort of buy the players that they need to get?
You know, Nick's always the advocate for the smaller side. The one thing I've got to ask you, I know we've spoken about Grealish, we've spoken about Gundogan, and we've spoken about Bruno Fernandes. But Sucic, is it Sucic? Is that how you pronounce his name? Where's Sucic. Scott? Sucic. Scott's been, yeah, he's been Sucic. Absent for a while. We need the pronunciation king back in the house anyway. Should he not be nominated here in terms of also candidate, one of the most underrated players, or I don't know, most improved? I don't know what you want to give him. Should he be in the same conversation as the other three players we're talking about?
I don't know, man.
We just want to give him something close.
We should find a category for him. I don't know what it can be. Maybe.
Give him something.
most surprising player. I don't know, something like that.
Go ahead. No, I'm not really alluding to your question. I'm still just thinking here. But like West Ham, you got to give them credit because, you know, this was a sort of game where if they weren't contenders for a European place, they would go and lose or draw to a West Ham, to a Sheffield United. But they convincingly smashed them, although they are down and out. But, you know, Man United dropped points to them. I mean, arguably Newcastle dropped points to them. But, you know, they're winning games where they need to. Can they maintain it? 14 games? Is there 14 games left?
14 games left, yeah.
Still a long way to go. So I think give it to Mark 30, game 30, and let's see from there.
If they get in the 30th game and Sucic is still there doing things, not getting red cards, but scoring some goals, then, like Jason said, I actually think that's what we're looking for. Then does he make the team of the year in the Premier League?
Maybe team of the year, but do you not think that their success isn't based on just a Sucic doing well? Do you not think it's a collective team that's doing well?
There's Rice, Chris Wall.
Look at their backline, look at where they're getting goals from. You know, I think as a collective, they're better than the individuals. Whereas
Nick,
a Bruno
can't
Fernandez,
give awards to the collective. So now you're saying because they're doing well collectively, we can't give a player who's actually outperforming, giving him an award. Let's ignore him.
If I was in fifth at the moment, I would be saying Andy Carroll's the best player in the league at the moment. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying from a perspective of.
Also, he's trying to kill you. He is trying to kill you. This Andy Carroll comment. He's trying to have you like laugh to death here. I don't know what's going on there.
He's having you laugh to
Andy Carroll.
But they're doing well. And I think we got to give credit where credit's due. And I just think there is still a long way to go. yes, Suchek's probably their standout player up until now, but I think he wouldn't have got there if it wasn't for the rest of them. Where if you had to compare Bruno, at times Bruno has carried a Man United when they've been down and out. And he has
stood out. Looked like they're against it.
Exactly. Where, you know, I think as a collective, West Ham have been a little bit more, you know, inclined to go and sort of and punish teams.
Wonga, what's your opinion there?
Look, I agree with Clint. I mean, even the manager himself, I think, has also done well. I mean, they brought in Lingard as well. I think he's on loan. I don't know what the loan terms are, but I mean, look, it's not costing the club anything, and he's giving them, he's giving them, I mean, good options up front, you know, more options up front. And it's not like he's just adding something, but he's literally, I mean, it's quite a lethal option up front. I mean, the game they played against Sheffield now, he could have scored, I mean, twice, clear opportunities he had. I agree with Nick when he says it's a collective. I think it's literally everyone there. Whether it's a fluke or not, we'll only see, only till the end of the season will tell. But I believe it's a collective.
I think it's tough. It's tough for Suchek to be in a team of the season when in the midfield areas, when they pick, they will be looking at Gundogan, they'll be looking at Fernandes, then they'll be looking at a Grealish. You know what I mean? They'll be looking at those players.
Gundogan, they can make him a false nine. They'll push him up there.
No, but then, you know, then Salah needs to be in there because he's obviously, looks like he'll be the golden boot winner right now. Then he falls in and then they're darling player, Harry Kane, you know, and Heung-Min Son, if they wake up again, I guess.
Do both of those players make the final team of the year?
If they can wake up,
they definitely will. Though, I mean, Harry Kane was out for a bit. If he can maintain it,
I think I have a better player that should be in the team instead of Son, and that is Saka.
Saka, for sure.
I think Saka should be in the team ahead of Son. Consistency wise, he's been consistent in terms
Son
of
Son scores like 10 Arsenal. Goals in one game and then goes quiet for another 20.
Saka's been there every single game. Wins us penalties, scores rightly, drinks the ball, washes the ball.
And then there's Foden as well. So, hey man, there's a lot of good players in the Premier League, guys. You know.
I think what you can rest on, Claude, is just to say we compliment them and allow them to say they've done well so far, but to give them anything is tough.
Musa, James has a question for you. He says you need to buy a new Chelsea skipper ASAP.
Tell him I'm working on that chip.
Waiting for budget,
man. I wasn't sure about my coach at the moment, but now things are coming alright, so I can get the skipper.
I think before we look for a new skipper, we need to get new headphones there, Baba. Huh?
Yeah, first things first.
Right, guys, and that's pretty much it for today's show. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We've had a good couple of guys with us. Akil, thank you. You're becoming a regular. We appreciate that. Marcus, you were in our starting 11, but you've moved to the larger extension of the squad because you've gone MIA. I don't know if illness or sickness. I don't know what your case is. And obviously, Pumalani, thank you. Thank you very much. And to everyone else who joined, that I don't know, I can't see anyone else. Selo, you want to say something?
No, Akil, who else is there? Yeah, no.
Jason,
yeah. And then James now. Yeah, man. No, thanks a lot, guys.
Alessandro earlier on.
Alessandro, yes. Bruno Fernandes.
But you know what? Alessandro, he was only ever a 5-minute player, that guy. Comes in, comes out. That's right. You can tell him that. And obviously, Dean, thank you very much for joining us as well, man. We really appreciate it. Final thoughts, guys.
Just be cool, guys.
Europa.
All the best to Liverpool playing Leipzig tonight.
I mean, good luck to LSC out there.
Yeah, just Claudio, can you just keep me updated with the score line and everything happening in the game? I'm gonna watch the PSG and Barca game.
Hey man, I'll do that, but I'm very superstitious. So if we score first, I'm not going to tell anyone because I told you guys on the weekend and we land up losing that 1-3-1. I don't know how that happened. Right, guys, remember, if you don't know what to be,
be cool.
Be cool.
Yeah, that's it, guys. Have a good evening. Thank you very much.
Be cool, James.